season 13 of the A-League brings you.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can tell, it's not Patrick anymore. I've taken over permanently.
Ever again.
No, yay. That's not true. Patrick couldn't make it again, unfortunately.
Cut it out.
I don't know what's come up this time. It's definitely not a show this week.
It's the ladies. Well, a lady.
You say that in such a sleazy way.
He dropped off again this afternoon and he has a meeting related to a show. So it's not a show itself.
No, but it could be a show.
It's showtime. So yeah, as you can tell, Dave and Cam are both here.
Yeah.
Hello.
And it's the big time, boys.
The big time.
It's the big time.
That's a terrible nickname for us. Let's not call ourselves the big time boys.
Yeah.
It's the big time, comma, boys.
This is not going how you intended, is it?
No, nothing.
So what you're trying to insinuate is it's to be big honest, time because we're starting this weekend? Is that where you're driving?
Oh yeah, okay. Basically.
Is that a nickname you're trying to start for yourself?
For the big time
big
boys.
Big time boy. And you thought maybe if I expand it out, we could be the big time boys.
Yeah. Oh, so you've got a Gascoigne shirt for, Patrick. I can see a big time boy photo shirt for
Frosty
coming up.
Shorten it down to big boy.
He's just had his birthday, so it's not like we're getting through.
Sorry, mate. Ruined it for everyone.
Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
God, not soon enough. Anyway, we are playing this week.
This year.
You sure you want to host today?
I'm on fire. Let's go. Yes, we are playing this week. Sunday, 5 p.m. at the Caketon Ring of Fire.
Against?
The Newcastle Jets.
Yep.
Home of the mighty Ernie Merrick.
There's lots of narrative in this one.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
So former coach, Mr. Redenton has popped over there.
Yep. Couple of goalkeepers.
Yeah, were we that upset about all of those goalkeepers?
Oh, I'd quite happily have kept Mossy here. And I feel...
I don't think that was the implication Frosty was making.
And I feel sorry that it didn't work out for Lewis.
Yeah.
Because I like the kid. He's a lovely guy.
I think it's fascinating that he's ended up behind Moss again. That's a really interesting narrative. Because I think part of his frustration here was being stuck behind Moss and not really getting a look in. And he finally got a look in and it didn't go that well for him. And then he's immediately got himself behind Moss again.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
In that situation, you take the contract that's
on absolutely.
Offer.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have a number one contract in the A-League and he's offered a number two contract in the A-League, you can understand why he'd take it.
I think basically he's worked out that the only thing worse than getting stuck behind Moss is being stuck behind an 18-year-old kid. And so he's gone, you know what, Moss wasn't so bad.
Well, sitting between those two things is not having an A-League contract. And I think that's the conclusion to come to, and it's a fair one.
And I think it was a very real possibility. I think if Ernie hadn't thrown him a lifeline like he did, he probably wasn't getting picked up anywhere else. I don't think what coaches saw from him last season would have been enough to sign him on, whereas Ernie knows him well enough from having worked with him to have a bit more background there and go, actually, I think we can,
boost that confidence.
Yeah.
I think he's entirely a confidence player, and when the confidence is up, he does really, really well. But when the confidence is down, he's not getting what he needs from the manager, and that seemed to be the case with the whole team, though, last season, didn't it, really, until Greeny took over.
His technical failings have always been the same technical failings as well. He's a very good shot stopper, but his kicking was poor, and that's precisely why Smith got promoted ahead of him, which, obviously didn't pan out as well, but, yeah, it remained a problem that he couldn't really kick that well.
Yeah. So I did find it. I'm sorry it didn't work out for him, but I wish him no ill will, man. I'm quite happy to see him.
Anyway, we're meant to be talking about Phoenix. We're talking about X-Phoenix, man.
It's fine.
How exciting is it going to be to have some football to watch again?
Finally.
Well, so long as all things go okay.
No, I'm just really excited about heading to the stadium. I'm just like, I've been trying to build up to this. I was actually talking to Jason Pine about this today, and the last few weeks where we haven't really had games to look at and talk about, and it's just been nothing. I'm really wanting to get to the stadium and watch some football.
Can we talk about the name drop as well?
Why would you talk about that?
Because it was pretty unsubtle.
Oh, really?
You just whacked that out on the table.
Should I drop some more names in there? Is that what you're driving?
Yeah, you can tell us what you've been doing this evening if you like.
Okay, we can talk about that later. How's that?
Yeah, okay, fair enough. We are playing the Jets, and again, narratives. But how do we feel like it's actually going to happen on the pitch? What do we think that First of all, do we have a clear idea of who's playing? And
well, it's going to be the Phoenix versus the Jets.
Yeah.
Individually.
11 on 11. Yeah.
I feel like this is a one-on-two podcast.
I don't know how this has happened, but today, yeah, you've really set yourself up to get picked on. It's gone, strangely.
I should have gone with a round table.
It's because we miss Patrick.
I think it's how he set up the microphones. We're on this side, he's on that side.
It's like an interview, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually it's Patrick, and Patrick leaves himself open for these things. And we haven't seen him for a while, and the lack of Patrick means we've been building this up for some time. So.
Yeah. I looked at that round table that's sitting beside us and thought, I should sit us here. It'd be quite nice. Mm. And no, I just went, no, we'll sit in the same spots as usual. Yeah, it's fallen badly for me.
So let's focus on the game. I don't think it's 100% clear who's going to play, to be honest. I haven't seen enough of us play in enough training sessions to really get a grasp of what Rudan will do. I know what I want him to do, but whether that actually happens or not is a different story, because they may have a whole lot of different things happen in training in the last few weeks.
Well, let's first speculate on what we think Mark Rudan will do. And he seems fairly comfortable with that 3-5-2 formation. I don't think that's out there.
The 5-3-2?
5-3.
Yeah, well, which kind of morphs into a 3-4-3 kind of on attack.
Well, I don't think it does, but I think certainly there's that the transition with the fullbacks. I'll certainly grant you, or the wingbacks. I think they are.
Well, I think the key thing that you and I have talked about a bit that I think the press conference today might have answered for us. We've talked about that the three in the midfield,
yes.
But where it hasn't in the patches of football we've seen, it hasn't looked like a traditional 5-3-2. The three in the midfield. In a standard setup, you'd have one sitting defensive and holding. You'd have two advanced in front of that. He hasn't looked like he's been playing with that. It's seemed like you've had one kind of floating. It seemed more linear. It seemed varying things at different points throughout. But today in the press conference, it seemed to me reasonably clear from his suggestion that Roofer and Mandy have kind of taken a front runner spot there, that he's going to have two sitting deep and one sitting higher, or potentially one still roaming. But I think to me it says you've got two sitting deeper and one up top. Because if you're playing two higher as you would in the traditional way, you'd have a different – you'd only have one of those two on the park.
Yep.
That's sure. Going to have a flow-on effect further up the pitch where you've got – it's going to put a lot more pressure on your wing-backs because they're going to have to do a lot more moving forward.
Yep.
It's also going to narrow the channels that your front two are going to be able to run into because they are both wide strikers. If he plays any of Krishna, Burns, and Williams, they all play wide and cut in.
Yep.
But they're going to lose space because the wingbacks are going to be going up and down that line, running into that same kind of space. It also puts a massive amount of pressure on whoever you play as your 10, whether it be Singh or Nichols, because all that creativity is going to come through there, and there's going to be very little else coming from behind them. So that has, for me, the hallmarks of a fast counter-attack setup and a team that will shut up shop at 1-0 and try to win 1-0.
Totally agree with the cutting in and the wingbacks. I think that's deliberate, though. I think that what he's looking to do is basically if the wingbacks get forward with Burns and Krishna or Williams and Krishna or whatever the front two are, he's looking to get them inside and get potentially an overload, get the fullback basically our fullback against their fullback, or Krishna being able to drop, or the other attacker just to get inside between the centre back or draw the centre back out wide. I think they're basically trying to get an overload on that isolate those fullbacks. That's what it feels like to me when you're playing that really aggressive high wing backs and wide attackers. You were just talking about Singh versus Butters. And I think that this is interesting. See, for me, I don't think you can – if we're playing two back, I think you have to play Singh up front.
Yeah.
You have to play a dedicated 10. And I don't think – Butters is a good all-round centre midfielder. And if you were playing kind of a holding player and then someone in between and then a 10, I think that Butters night and day is your barring the fact I've only seen Mandy in a little bit. he's that box-to-box kind of guy. Mandy, maybe he can do that as well. But it has to be Singh up the top.
I think if you're playing the traditional 5-3-2, you'd have Nichols and Singh. They would be the perfect pairing for the higher two, and then you'd be quibbling over who's sitting as the holding, and you've got a bunch of options there. But if we're assuming we're playing Mandy and Roofer, which it sounds like Kupczynski must be on the outer then. There was some discussion on the forums and things about potentially an injury there. Maybe that's what's pushed Roofer forward. But if those two are on the field, I agree. I think it's got to be Singh in the other spot.
It's quite interesting, actually, because we all agree that... Well, actually, this is, it kind of feels a bit more like two number eights playing in the holding, because Mandy, I know very little about him, to be honest, at all. I would assume, apart from the fact that he plays central mid, that would be more like a number eight kind of position, along with Roofer, who plays number eight kind of position. So perhaps my negativity around the creativity of the team is misplaced, but... Either of those guys could do a number eight role. They could push forward in support of Singh and come back and hold. Yep. So that could also be some thinking around there. It's a bit more fluidity through that midfield.
Oh, I got to disagree.
I know nothing about Mandy, so this is
Like I said, I've only seen him play a little bit, and he strikes me as having more of the capacity to go up and back just because he's a bit more knowledgeable about the game. See, Roofer tends to get him,
bagged Roofer a fair bit, though.
Oh, no, I'll be honest with you. What I've seen so far this season, I've actually thought he was pretty sharp. The last game I saw him in, I thought he was very good. Not great opposition, but, you know, who cares? You still got to beat whoever's up front.
Yeah.
But he's the sort of guy that doesn't necessarily read the defensive play as well as a dedicated DM.
I agree. So it's interesting that they're choosing to play him there. If you also think that Mandy would make a better eight, why are they choosing Roofer in this?
Well,
six?
No, I think that's the point, is that you leave Roofer so he's not having to get up and back and find himself out of position. So you put a more astute person in to try and cover both attack and defence, whereas Roofer can concentrate on one job and do that job. Let's face it. I mean, we've got to remember that Roofer was... There was an attempt by both Ernie and Daria to get Roofer to develop into a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, he'd started the first game last season alongside Boratsky.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, potentially that's a further development, and that's, you know, obviously with Redenton going on, you know, a local player, a domestic, has to fill, you know, that at least the very least the backup defensive midfielder spot. But coming on to Kupczynski, it's a bit of an elephant in the room. He just seems to have disappeared. There's no mention of injuries or anything like that, but
there's been rumors of it. I haven't seen it from any sort of confirmed source, but I've certainly seen people throwing around as a possibility on the forums. Where that's come from, I don't know.
Yeah, I've also
I don't have the time to go down and watch trainings and see who's
no, neither do I, so it's a shame.
Yeah, I've also heard that, you know, he's on the outer for other reasons.
Yep.
But again, these are just pure speculation. There's nothing completely unfounded. Yeah. But
and that speculation is driving other speculation when we talk about the connection with possible marquee players and that sort of thing that have been coming up in the last few days as well.
So. Well, yeah, directly from Rudan as well. I mean, his interview he did with One News, he specifically talks about a marquee player, and he drops a few hints as to who that might be. And
marquee international striker, uncontracted,
yep,
but would qualify for money through the FFA.
And the only sticking point in what he says in the interview is essentially the money. He says we think he's asking for a bit too much right now. But there's an unspoken implication that I think they could talk him down.
Yeah.
You know, it's starting
still active
point's a bit outside their range, but, you know, they're looking at it, and hopefully they can get it to a range that is workable. If that's true, that means they either have to be a local, which I don't know anyone who fits that mold locally that
someone
I can think of.
Someone suggested Leckie, or who was the other guy?
Leckie's not a number nine. He's not a striker.
No, I don't think
so. He's another in the mold of wide player that we've already got three of. Mm. I don't know why we'd be looking at another one of those.
Totally agree.
And he wouldn't qualify for marquee money, I wouldn't think.
No.
He might do. He's played a lot for Australia.
As an Australian marquee, maybe.
The thing is, the way he talks in that interview, it doesn't feel like
Australian
marquee.
It feels like
it's
name.
A big name. Yeah.
Yeah. He says doing air quotes so that
everyone can see. Yeah. No, but so the implication there to me is that we're looking at an import who happens to be a free agent, so the transfer deadlines and stuff don't matter, but we don't think we have an import slot.
Maybe
Krishna's citizenship has come through,
if we're
freeing up a spot,
Copper.
And the obvious one to free up would be the loan deal rather than any signed player.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, eh? And I think this is where that speculation is. It's driving more of that.
Have we
kind
ever
of
talked on the pod about him having a good game? Have we ever said we really like what we see?
No, in fact, I think the last pod we specifically said we forgave him Bentley Greens because he'd just come in, had a 10-day camp, and this was his first kick around.
Yeah.
You forgive the poor performance. But when we get to the point now, from where we last saw him play, this is where, and for me, that was Napier than I think the last time I saw him play, where he got effectively two yellows in the first half.
So he hasn't basically covered himself in glory.
No.
He's on a loan deal, which means that a loan can be just basically cancelled and it won't cost us any money. And it frees up a marquee spot, which potentially...
You assume. We don't know the terms of the loan.
Yeah. But typically, a loan deal is just can be rescinded at the drop of a hat. And the marquee that Mark Renan's mentioned sounds, certainly the reading between the lines, like it is an international player of some repute. So all those together sounds, at the very least, interesting. Yeah. Speculation sounds interesting.
The whole interview, if you haven't watched it, you should go listen to it. It's on the One News website, and I think I've retweeted it, a few others have. You should be able to find that reasonably easily. It's about 20 minutes of very good audio, and I wrote myself some notes, and I think I'm probably a massive cynic because the things I've pulled out to talk about are not the things that I would say were the positives. I think there's a hell of a lot of positives, but we've talked a lot, and a lot of other people have talked about how Redan is saying all the right things, and he does a lot of that in these 20 minutes. But there were two interesting things that I wanted to pull out. One is he talks about his leadership structure, and he talks about how he doesn't like having a leadership group within the team, and he expects even the youngest players to be leaders within that group. But that's really good. I really like that. And so part of the boot camp stuff you might have read about was all around forcing other people, you know, the younger players, to get out of their shell and actually, you know, make some decisions and lead people in certain scenarios and that kind of stuff, which is great. But it had me wondering how kind of a captaincy structure fits within that and what that's like in a practical sense on game day or on the field. And obviously he's had the structure work for him before, so he must have some idea. But it just had me wondering how that can work where you're still going to appoint a captain and a vice captain and that structure exists, but how does that work when you're also expecting everyone to be able to lead and saying that no one is better than anyone else? It just raised that question for me of how that can work.
Yeah, see, for me, I heard that, and my reading between the lines was that it was more of basically using your voice. Everyone is basically being told, hey, it's not just people in the leadership group making the decisions and having a voice. It extends further than that. If you're on the field, you have the right to speak up and say something. I'm hoping that it's kind of implicit that it's like you can say something and discuss, you know, and put your point across, and someone can get their point across, and you kind of go, okay, right. Well, it's not just the oldest guy or the guy wearing the armband that says we're going to do this.
I'm okay with a collaborative environment as long as the final word, they all know who the final word comes from. So that's either Redan or it's Dura, or if the vice captain is Krishna or Taylor, whoever that happens to be, that's where, sure, listen to the points and get your ideas across, but the final word still needs to come from that position of authority.
Yeah, because that would be my question as well. I think even under the old structure where there was a leadership group outside of just the captain and vice captain, you know, there were some other, you know, some key players in there. It wasn't necessarily based on age or experience. Some of the guys in there were quite young, but they, you know, had been selected as leaders because of their ability to lead, you know. And I think there still can be a collaborative environment around that in terms of ensuring people can talk up and have their views heard and, you know, give that feedback. But someone, as you say, has to make the call at the end of the day. And I would assume, obviously, Redan is the be-all and end-all. But on the field, you've also got to have someone out there making some of those calls as well, potentially. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. I really like the idea behind it, but something worries me on a practical level of whether or not that'll work and how people will transition to that, particularly those who've been at the club for a while. And there's a lot of youth there now and a lot of new players into the club. We'll see how that pans out, hopefully really well.
Yeah, I did take another point from that, in that Redan did specifically say, you know, that he was making the decisions now, and it's kind of like below that I took as being the collaborative level. I suspect that he will run a – it sounds the way he's structured everything. It's very structured. I heard David Williams talking on an Aussie football show, and he was saying that originally when they started training, when he first got there, they were doing up to 2-hour video sessions, which is phenomenal, you know, not for games, actually for trainings and work that they were doing. So that to me says that they are spending a lot of time on structure and learning the way that 11's going to work together on the field. He said that, you know, obviously they've cut down now, but I mean, that was early days, unopposed, or, you know, just working on stuff.
That makes kind of sense if what you're trying to get across is a complete change to the environment and a complete change to everything that's happened within the structure previously.
But 2 hours is a long time. You know, hour and a half, 2 hours for a video session is unheard of.
It's just like being in a school classroom or a lecture, to be honest, mate.
And one of the big things that he hammers home in the interview as well is that he wants people to understand why. He doesn't just want to tell people what to do. He wants them to get why they're doing it so that it's not just doing what you're told, it's understanding what you're doing so you can actually apply the concept into your game. You know, you have the ability to adapt to situations because you know the underlying reasons to everything that you're being asked to do. So that's really interesting. I suspect probably a basis of that is you really have to understand the structure and what he's wanting out of that. And so probably starting off with 2 hour video sessions and that kind of stuff isn't a bad place to go with wanting people to get the why.
The cynic in me says that the attention span of most footballers is not 2 hours long. However, I totally believe in the idea of understanding the concept so you can apply the logic of the concept.
Yeah.
It's something that I don't think that enough coaches do. So I'm quite pleased to hear that from Rudan. Yeah. You said you had another point.
I do. My other one I think is more interesting in terms of he straight out says this, and he talks about how he could leave at the drop of a hat. And he talks at some length about that. And it seems to largely be around, you know, getting the right support and the right buy-in. But there's also just an implication of he is invested in this 100% until he's not, and then he'll be gone. And it as a fan on some level, given how much we're kind of at a kind of last roll of the dice stage in many ways, because the license isn't such a concern anymore, but we really need to perform this season in order to convince an independent A-League that we're also worth it. I mean, that's important. If his results don't go his way, is he just going to walk? Is that an unspoken implication to that? Or is he only talking about support structures and that kind of stuff? Because he doesn't say that. He implies that's a big part of it. But if, you know, 4 or 5 losses don't go his way, are we in an Ernie situation where he loses belief in himself and all of what he's set up, that he might just go, this isn't working, I'm out?
See, for me, I don't read him as having that a low level of self-confidence.
No, absolutely not. I think the thing is it felt to me like he was saying it was 100% or 0%. And if he starts dropping from 100, he might be done. That might be it, you know? And at the moment, we're at 110. You know, he has a lot of self-belief, but how much does it take to dent that? We don't know.
Yeah, I took it as that, because I heard exactly that and was kind of like, oh, hang on. And then I was kind of like, but he was, at the time, he was talking a lot around the support structures and basically getting the buy-in that he wants. So I think that it's more, if it felt to me as though he was saying, if the players give up or if management don't buy into what I'm selling, I'm gone, I'm done.
Yeah.
He made a point of saying, you know, I've fully committed to this, because he had said, you know, I'm out, and then he's gone, well, look, I'm fully committed to this. Mm-hmm. I left my family behind and I moved over here because I can't move the family over. And so I am in this, and I think that he's basically saying I'm fully committed. If everyone else around me doesn't commit to that level, then there's no point in me being here and I'm done.
Yeah, there's a tough part in that, though, of getting the players to commit to it really is on him. If he starts losing the dressing room, that's as much his fault as anyone, right? And I think we could say that's precisely what happened last season, is the dressing room was lost. I certainly hope we don't see that again, but it's interesting this close to the season to hear him talking in those terms. I think at this point he should be reasonably well convinced the management and those support structures are supporting him. If he's not sold on that yet, that's a bit of a worry. So I would say he is reasonably convinced on that. So it felt like a weird time to be hammering that home, unless he's talking about the structures outside of that as well.
Yeah, I wasn't all that worried about it. I did take your point that it was kind of like he's just basically – I think he's one of those guys that lays it quite out there. Yeah, he just lays it flat on the table and says, there it is.
And I really respect that. I really liked that about him, which is why I kind of started this whole thing saying, I don't want to talk about the good stuff he said. I want to pick out a couple weirder things that I think came out of it, because 99% of this interview is him saying the things I want him to say.
Yeah. I also think that losing the dressing room is not so much of an issue this, because we do have so many leaders in there now. Last year we had Dura, but we had a lot of imports that had come in that were expected to be leadership potential players, and for one reason or another, it just wasn't their personality. I mean, Paratski, very quiet, you know, just tried to get about his business. Lujic was kind of up and down on the field, so not a natural leader by example anyway.
He only came in January though, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. You had, obviously you lost Dario, who was that leadership level player, and Kaladirovic, not so much. And so you were left with basically the two old guard of Krishna and Dura trying to hold things.
And Lynchy as well.
Yeah.
But Wemac wasn't even commanding a spot in the team, so.
Yeah, still he was commanding respect off the field, though. So he still had a level of mana in the dressing room, which matters, even if you're not on the field. Look at Leo Bertos and Vince Lear to a degree. They didn't play every game, but there was no doubt they carried mana at the same time.
So yeah, but when you're
in the same category.
I think when the coach is losing the dressing room, your assistant coach goes, one of your best players and one of your leaders goes, you've ripped the spine out and you need a whole lot more than that. And I think the fact that you've brought in Taylor, you still have Dura and Krishna. You've also brought in Butters and Williams, who say what you like about them. They're A-League quality players, and they have the respect within that group just because they've done it enough times and they know what they're about. And they've been around for a long enough time. So you now actually have quite a solid spine in there of A-League quality, experienced, professional players. And I think that makes a lot of difference. If you were to, say, rip two of them out and send them packing, you know, all bets are off. But I just don't see it happening this time.
So none of us saw it happening last time either, though.
No, mate, last time the coaches came as a package. And that's what we were sold. We didn't see this happening last time. That was a very big shock.
Yeah.
In hindsight, they were having a chip at each other in that Auckland City game in pre-season. And that was never a great thing. But
yeah, hindsight's wonderful, yeah, reading a whole lot into hindsight.
That's like
for sure.
Yeah, a disagreement. Sorry.
Yeah.
Let's stick to it, though. How are we going to go? Generally, we've talked about formation, what we think we're going to put out there. How do you think that team is going to actually perform against what, for me, was a team that deserved to win the league, deserved to win the grand final last season? They were unlucky to finish second, but deserved a second place in the league. They had a great season. So how are we going to stack up against that?
Well, for me, I come back to it being Ernie's team. We know how Ernie plays. He doesn't really change the way.
But he did change last season.
He did a little bit.
He changed quite a lot last season.
Not that much.
He didn't play the same style with the same formation he did because he didn't have the cattle to do it. But what he struck on worked brilliantly with those players. Is he going to go back to what he knows? Is he going to stick with this, with the recruitment that he's done in the offseason? I actually think he's going to stay playing the same way he did last season because it worked.
I think he has to.
Yeah, and the recruitment has been solid but not spectacular, so I don't envisage him changing that in any way, shape, or form.
No, I think we know what we're going to get from Ernie.
And but again, it worked. It worked really, really well.
But the problem is we know that Ernie's inability to adapt. He had a year or so to kind of work out with Newcastle, and he basically, when people worked out the way he was going to play and you could just shut up shop and counter us, he basically, that was a third of the way through the season, and he had no answer for the rest of it.
And I certainly think the fast counter-attack is where we're going to be going on Saturday.
Oh, just for sure.
From what that press conference said and what I've seen in pre-season, that's where I consider us going. Yeah.
But I don't think that he's going to be that far away from it. I think there's going to be it's not going to be a fantastic.
Tell me, no, we don't want the ball. You have it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we don't want the ball.
There is not going to be a tremendous amount of passing around in that middle third. It's either going to be one third and then break down to the other third. So
one thing we're not lacking is pace. There's plenty of pace in those front three.
Oh boy,
Singh's not exactly slow. As long as there's quick ball movement to go with it, I think we could definitely do some damage on the break.
Yeah, are we putting money on someone like Butters going through Redenton early doors?
It's almost inevitable, isn't it? I'd prefer it that was Rufa versus Redenton.
Oh, Rufa. Yeah. Rufa would do him from behind. We know
bad blood. Those two are friends, but I would like to see them against each other finally.
Rufa is the kid that gets white line fever. We know that. We saw him come off the reserve bench and go right through the back of someone late.
So what do you reckon? What are we going to do?
I think this is going to be a bit of a stalemate because I don't think anyone's coming in with any degree of form or confidence. It's going to be a prize fight. It's just going to be jab, jab, see what comes out. If there are goals in it, there will only be one different, I think. It's going to be like a
2-1.
2-1
to?
I think it's coin toss.
Interesting.
Yeah, I honestly, if Rudan gets his way and turns us into a fight in the top 2 inches, I think we've got a better than average chance of coming out on top. If Ernie can turn it into a fight on the field, just basically footballing talent, then we're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, I think that's going to be our problem with the whole season in many ways. I think so much of Rudan's prep has been around structure and culture that when things are going well for us, I think we're going to perform really well. I think the team, when it's gelling and, you know, it's quite a defensive structure, it's very counter-attacking. When we're keeping a clean sheet and we're pressing forward and some chances are coming, I think we'll keep working towards that. And I think we'll be happy in that scenario. You know, sitting at nil all going into the 70th minute, I think we'll feel very comfortable in that scenario. I think the potential place it falls apart is if we concede early goals and we're not getting anything going forward. I think it'll be worrying because they're going to be set up to keep out those goals. So I think you're right that it's going to be a real battle there. And so long as we're, you know, sitting right in the mix, come down to the end, I think anything could happen here and we could nick some points. But I think the Jets are going to be technically better than we are, and that could be the telling factor. So it's going to be hard to know until we see us out there against an A-League opposition how all of that preseason stuff is gone. We've seen bits and pieces against lower quality sides. We've seen us do well against the Victory. That's a great result. If that's the sign to take, then fantastic. We're probably going to go out there and romp this. We'll keep a clean sheet and we'll put 3 or 4 in. But that's one game. It could have just been the day. So I agree. I think we're seeing a one goal difference here. I think it's probably 1-0, and I'm going to say to us, but it could go the other way.
My pick was 1-0 to us, and it will be a fast break goal to one of the front three, depending on who actually plays. I'm hoping it's Burns because I really want him to get confidence of scoring early in the season.
Do you think he's even playing?
Again, whichever three plays. I'm not going to put a name on who I think will start up front. I genuinely can't tell between the three. I haven't seen them play
since Napier. I mean, I think Christian starts.
Christian has
to start. I think it's a coin toss between Williams and Burns.
Yeah, and I think we'll get one, and then it will be a shit fight until the end of the game.
Yep.
And I could see Newcastle scoring it being a draw, but I'd like to think it's going to be 1-0 us.
Do we think there's any surprises in the starting 11?
Well, if he's starting Roofer and Mandy instead of Copper in there, then that's a surprise on its own. I don't think it would be a surprise if he started Williams over Burns. Burns hadn't shown great form at the end of last season. Again, I haven't seen him since Napier's, and Napier, he scored, and he started, Williams came on. And I haven't seen them in training for a while, so depending on how that's gone, it could go either way. So I wouldn't be overly surprised. I'd probably be surprised if Butters started ahead of Singh. I think Singh did enough to deserve the opportunity to start in the first game of the season.
Yeah, I don't think Butters plays instead of Singh. I think it's Butters or the new guy, Mandy.
So I see. Basically, the back three, I think, I don't know if Fox is over the abdominal injury, I think it was, that he had. If he is, it's a toss-up between him and Doyle, who plays the third centre-back, but with Durante and Taylor. And if it's Fox that plays it, I would put Doyle out on the left wing-back instead of Kakache. But if Doyle plays centre, because Fox isn't, Kakache goes on the left.
Yeah.
Right-hand side, though, Fenton, or was it Ruben Way that we signed today? Possibly him, but he's had no time with the team.
It's
so
Fenton.
It's hard to
you can't just drop him in.
So it's really, well, football's one of those games where if you're going to tell someone that your job is to defend and run up and down that line, he probably could do a job for the 90 minutes. So,
no,
I don't think he will. I genuinely don't think he will.
I think they've played Fenton basically the entire season there, and I think that he's one of the almost the nailed ons. It's obviously Dura and Taylor.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's Doyle left centre because I don't know that Taylor's a natural left centre and Dura certainly is not.
No.
Dura played left centre with Siggy for 8 years.
Yeah, with a very, very backward left fullback.
It's Lockhead?
Like, yeah. But it's when you're playing wing backs, you are basically an inside fullback.
Yeah.
And he's got no left foot.
No. So I agree. I'd prefer Doyle of all of those options, but I'd be comfortable with Taylor playing the left side if Fox played the right. I just don't want to see Fox playing left.
I don't know if Taylor is a natural out there, but he's certainly better than Durant.
He's skilled enough that he can play there.
I don't think it's going to make much of a difference if he plays out there. So.
Yeah, I think particularly at this level, he will be more than comfortable on either side of that.
Easy. He'll find this easy.
Can I just say, Taylor is
huge. He is a beast.
He's a big lad.
I mean,
he's tall. He's almost as tall as Mark Rudan, and he's tall. And obviously, but he's got a footballer's build, so he doesn't really have the muscular size that you would expect from someone his height. But obviously, he is ripped. So he's a big, strong lad.
I saw him standing next to Fox, and Fox is not a small boy.
No,
and Fox is not. And he's a unit basically. Mm. And it looked like Taylor could eat him and not touch the sides. He's an absolute unit, and running around, you know, playing against some of the boys that were, I would call them normal football sized. It looked worrying, he was going to flatten someone.
Seeing Tails and Williams and Taylor stand beside each other, it's actually quite funny because Williams is short. He's shorter than me by a couple of inches. So it's and Taylor's,
is
he? Yeah, he is. He's not very tall.
It's
at all.
That ponytail that throws you out.
It's same with Burns. Burns is quite small.
Burns is tiny.
So we've got a very, very small front unit. But Tails, he's a big guy. Should we move on to the rest of the round?
Yeah, why not? Who's
Can we
playing?
Talk about signings?
No, we probably should.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Let's touch on it.
We've talked about some of the players. I don't know that we actually talked about the fact we'd signed them.
Okay, so we've obviously had Max Burgess previously. More recently, there has been Callan Elliott.
Wellington Boyd.
Do not write Tasman. Callum on the forums. That will only make people angry.
Callan,
can we get this as an autocorrect?
via Tasman and the rapper, one of Eiffel's proteges.
First one to come out of the Eiffel Academy, apparently, to sign a full pro contract.
He probably knows exactly where a goal is. Yeah. What's his way?
Ruben Way.
Thank you. Yeah. Ruben Way from the NPL, Heidelberg, I believe.
Yeah.
Plays right fullback, probably left as well, I believe.
Yeah.
You've missed a midfielder as well that I think was signed since.
Mandy.
Play for Real Madrid seconds.
Armando Pena Sosa.
Well done.
Yeah, I can't remember whether it's Sosa Pena or Pena Sosa.
You've done well. I have no idea if you're right or not.
But hence why they call him Mandy.
Yeah.
Because you can imagine trying to get that out. And we learnt that Max Burgess is speaks fluent Spanish. And did the translation, which I thought is a great way to get yourself a contract if you can be the translator and a player. So well done, him.
Yeah.
And that brings us to 20, I believe.
20. Yes. Yeah, I believe that's correct.
So that's our minimum done. It feels to me like that is there are two Australian youth players that will be brought over. I don't know their names. I can't remember.
But they were
just announced effectively as coming, presumably, to play for the Wings.
Well, there have been rumours floating around that maybe they were signing for the first team. Today it was confirmed by, I think it was Vorman, that they're signing for the Wings. So they're both theoretically eligible for New Zealand as well. So getting over here and getting a look in the local setup's not a bad shout for them.
Yeah.
It also gets them in the mix potentially for proper Phoenix contracts down the line.
How old were they?
I think they're both 19, both midfielders, which is why I was...
That's brilliant, because they'll be in the eyes of Des Buckingham for the under-20s. They'll be in the eyes for possible Olympic selection in the future as well. So
no, exactly. Which is,
it's a very canny move if you...
The second I heard it, it made a lot more sense than the fact we were looking at two more young midfielders, given we have a lot going on in midfield at the moment, and it seems like there already might be some dead weight there that we need to sort out. The bringing in two 19-year-olds in there felt very odd, but the second it was announced they're actually for the Wenix, it made a lot more sense.
So we've got those 20. There is the spec. It sounds like Rudan's going to keep three spots open. It doesn't sound like he's chasing filling the maximum.
Well, at this point, we can only fill that with free agents.
Yeah.
So at best, I think we end up at 21 with this marquee type signing potentially filling that spot.
That's if Krishna has been naturalised
or Copper.
But then Copper would go out and move back at 20. So
So
okay, let's go on to the rest of the round, Cam.
Cool. So Friday night, the A-League kicks off with Adelaide United playing Sydney FC. I can see this going Sydney's way. It'll be interesting, though, obviously, with Corica taking his first game in charge. Preseason Sydney look good. They're in the final against Adelaide in a couple of weeks' time. So it's a precursor to the FFA Cup final. So I still see Sydney taking it out, although Adelaide are at home. So that's New Zealand time, 9:50 on Friday night.
Yeah, totally. Adelaide and home records, not not fantastic. So in Sydney, they're not going to piss around.
Mm. Agree, Sydney comfortably.
And so second game at 9:50 on Saturday night is the Melbourne Derby, which I think is quite a way to start the season. I don't actually think you need to put the Derby at the start of the season. You should save that for like week two or three to, you know, keep the interest in the first week is always high anyway. So you don't really need the Melbourne Derby.
They like throwing those Derbies in early
I just find it so annoying that they try and plan that out. Like you look at how an EPL draw works, for example, they just happen.
Yeah, and, but you've got a lot more derbies there.
Correct, but you don't need to plan out like a derby round like the FFA do, and they try and theme these rounds, and it just feels so forced that it takes something away from it for me.
Like Star Wars round? Come on,
that it's frustrating. So I think when you happen to end up with this first week of the season, fine, but feels forced.
Anyone see past the victory for that?
No.
Oh, hell no. Unless Fornaroli hits the ground absolutely sprinting and gets through.
But, I mean, we rolled victory, so it clearly can be done. Maybe they're not quite peaking yet. I think they're still my pick for taking out the season, but maybe they're going to come in a little uncooked.
Maybe.
Let's face it, they will have a lot of AFC contract games to deal with.
Well, that's true. So Sunday is a triple header. We're first, obviously, against the Jets. That's followed by Brisbane Roar against Central Coast Mariners, which, for my estimation, will be the
horrible
wooden spoon derby. I can see that going to either team. I can't pick a result. I'm going to pick a 1-1, to be honest. I think that would be a draw, and it won't be one I watch.
I would say 1-0 to Brisbane. It will be an own goal.
I'm going to pick the Mariners. Yeah. I agree, though. I don't think it's going to be a good game to watch.
No, unless Bolt's playing, in which case it's liable to be 2-0 to Brisbane, goals.
He's not staying, mate. He's going to play in Malta.
Yeah, well,
I think that's a two-year contract, mate. It possibly is, but if he's offered a two-year contract as a pro, he's probably going to take it. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole thing there, though, I like that you've raised this because I would have otherwise, but I'd forgotten. The whole thing there, it's come from the agent. The FFA have not stumped up to chip in any money yet. He can't be funded out of the marquee fund, so they need to invent a Usain Bolt rule, like the Tim Cahill rule, to find some money for him. This is absolutely the way to go about that. The Mariners have first right of refusal to sign him. That still applies. If you want to ramp up the pressure on the FFA to get out their checkbook and make you a solid offer, what better way than going, we have a solid contract offer over here?
Yeah, Valletta FC in Malta.
Oh, they didn't say that to begin with, though. A European club vying for Champions League football or whatever they were talking up.
And that is true, because they'll go into the Champions League qualifying rounds if they finish
top. And then get murdered.
You're certainly drawing a reasonably long bow to claim Champions League club, though. It's not incorrect, but you've really talked that up, which is 100% the intent of that agent there, is to get the FFA to open their checkbook.
So the round will be finished off after that, 9 o'clock on Sunday, our time, with Perth versus Western Sydney. This one will be interesting. Again, quite a bit of narrative in there with Popper playing against Western Sydney.
Can I shake my head audibly?
No, you can't. No.
Because Perth are going to obliterate them.
Yes, I totally agree. Perth are going to win. It's going to be interesting to see how they go and how Popper's going to have them playing, especially with the talent that he's got together in that squad. So that's going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to that game, actually.
I think Perth could play with just picks any six random players, and Popper would have them beating the Wanderers.
It's going to be interesting anyway. So that's the round.
Obviously, there's some pretty sad news for Novocastrians at the moment. Johnny Katrumbas, one of their young players, he's just been diagnosed with cancer. So our thoughts go out to him and to his family, and hopefully speedy recovery.
The NZF ISB Handy Premiership started last weekend with Team Wellington losing 3-4 to Auckland away. Yep. So it should be Auckland City 1-4-3, really. I saw very little of this due to kids. In fact, I turned on the TV, Auckland scored, so I turned it back off again thinking I jinxed us. So sorry.
Yeah, that's how football works, Cam.
Yep.
Definitely does.
Anyone who's watched football 100% knows what Cam's talking about. That's a thing.
Yeah, it is entirely a thing. So I turned it off and we still lost, and I blame myself. It should have been a draw. Yeah. So, I've seen very little. I don't know how this game has gone.
I unfortunately did not get to watch it, but I heard from multiple people say that it was a stink fest.
I heard that Mario Barcia did score a stunner. And we were 2-0 up, then went 4-2 down before Hamish Watson scored a second, his second, and the third for Team Wellington late. But to be honest, a loss away to Auckland Cities, especially when you're scoring goals like that, it's not the end of the world. Auckland City are always going to be fighting out for the for the title, so you know, you take that. That's any points won there as a bonus. Any points won there are good points. So I would still expect us to beat them when they come down here on March the 10th.
Can I just throw out there, Hamish Watson is the current Golden Boot leader for the Handy Prem.
Good on him.
Patrick's very proud.
is he taking some credit for that, is he?
No, I don't know.
We are currently bottom. So that's actually another good point to thing to raise. The next game in Wellington will be at 2:05 p.m. on the Sunday at the stadium, yes, which is the Wellington Derby.
Well Classico.
Weenix are the home team.
Yep.
Can we just also mention the fundraising t-shirts, the Well Classico t-shirts?
That's a good idea, actually, yeah. So the FIBA designer, Special One, has put together a Well Classico t-shirt with funds going towards FIBA Dreams. If you're keen to get hold of one of those, jump on the forums. We can certainly point you in the right direction. And we'll also give FIBA Dreams a bit of a push. So if you're keen to put some money towards FIBA Dreams, which helps families that are in Ronald McDonald House get along to games, so at least they can have a couple of hours away from what they're going through, chuck some money towards Yak or have a chat to Yakko on forums. And, that'll be you'd be supporting a good cause to do so.
Yeah, my understanding is there'll probably be a bit of money in a hat at some stage or multiple stages for some home games.
Yeah, there'll be fundraising.
So donations, anything gratefully received, I think.
Yeah.
So that's all from us. So good night for me, Dave and Cam. We'll see you at the game.
Bye.
Have a lovely weekend. It's finally here, brings you.
Please Don't Suck, brings you.
A host that can pronounce names, brings you.
Armando Pena Sosa, brings you. Oh, obviously the Yellow Fever, mainly Yak, is pushing Fever Dreams to get families going through a bit of trauma.
I reckon you want to have another go at that and we'll edit that one out because the way you said he's trying to get families going through a bit of trauma is probably not the way to word that, but keep that as an outtake back.
Normally you'd hang me out to dry, but seeing as it's dealing with
like any other topic, that's on you.